Chapter 10. O'Brien. Syme had disappeared. One day, some people noticed that he was not at work. But the next day, nobody mentioned him. On the third day, Winston went to look for his friend's name on a notice board. There were lists on it of the members of clubs and societies, and one of the clubs was the chess club. Syme had been a member, but his name was not on the list. Nothing had been crossed out. The list was just one name shorter. Syme did not exist. He had never existed. The weather was burning hot during June, and everyone was working very hard preparing for Hate Week, especially Winston's neighbour, Parsons. He took control of all the flags, banners and posters on Victory House because he was trying to make sure it had more than any other building in London. A new hate song had been written. All day the telescreens played it, the proles shouted it in the streets, and in Victory House the two Parsons children sang it all the time. A huge poster of a Eurasian soldier had appeared on lots of walls. The soldier was carrying a gun, and when people were near the poster, the gun was always pointing at them. Adding to the mood of hate, more rocket bombs landed on the city, killing larger numbers of people than usual, including a lot of children in a school playground. Winston and Julia met seven times at the room above the shop during June. Winston had stopped drinking Victory Gin. He was fatter and healthier, and he no longer coughed in the mornings. Life was no longer so hard. Both of them knew that what was happening could not last long. Sometimes, when they lay in bed together, they held each other very tightly, as if it was the last time they would ever do it. But there were other times when they felt safe. It was as if they were inside Winston's paperweight, where no harm could come to them. Often they talked of escaping. They would become proles, get jobs in a factory, and live their whole lives together in a place where nobody would find them. Catherine would die, and they would get married. However, they never agreed about fighting the power of the party. Julia was uninterested in politics, although in some ways she understood things better than Winston. She thought that the party arranged for the rocket bombs to fall on London regularly in order to make people frightened all the time. She did not believe there was really a war at all, an idea which Winston had never thought about before. Julia did not care whether what she was told was the truth or lies. For example, when Winston explained that the party did not invent aeroplanes, as they had learned at school, because planes had existed before he was born, she was not interested. It frightened Winston a bit that she did not remember what happened in the recent past. It meant that she could not see the lies they were being told today. When he told her about his work at the records department, writing lies to change newspaper reports, she was not shocked. "Who cares?" was all she said. Winston tried to make Julia understand what the party was doing. He told her about finding the photograph of the three important party members who had been executed after they confessed to working for Eurasia. She listened as he told her how he had found the photograph in an old copy of the Times. He explained how this proved the three men had been in New York on the day they had confessed that they were in Siberia selling secrets to the Eurasians. "History has stopped," Winston said. "The party has made an endless present, and what they say and do is always right. If I had had the courage to keep that piece of paper, I could have shown it to a few people, and they might have started to doubt the party. I don't think we can change anything during our lives, but maybe the next generations could continue what we started. But Julia did not care about that either. I'm not interested in the next generation, she said. I'm interested in us. You're only a rebel from the waist downwards, Winston told her. Julia thought this was very funny and threw her arms around him, laughing. It happened at last. Winston was walking down a corridor in the Ministry of Truth when he felt that someone was walking behind him. The person coughed as if he was about to speak. Winston stopped and turned round. It was O'Brien. Winston's heart jumped violently. He realised that he could not speak, but O'Brien put a friendly hand on Winston's arm for a moment, so Winston turned again and they began walking together side by side. O'Brien began to speak in the serious, slow voice that all the inner party members used.
I've been hoping to talk to you, he said. I was reading one of your Newspeak articles in the Times the other day. You're very interested in Newspeak, I believe.
I'm interested in it, but I've never had anything to do with writing the dictionary, Winston managed to reply.
But you write it very elegantly, said O'Brien. This is not just my own opinion. I was talking to a friend of yours recently who is an expert. I can't remember his name for the moment.
Winston's heart jumped again. O'Brien must mean Syme. But Syme was dead, and he was not only dead, he was an unperson. O'Brien had shared a thought crime with Winston when he mentioned him. This must be a sign to show him that he and O'Brien were joined together in some way. O'Brien went on.
I noticed you had used two words in your article which are no longer in the dictionary. Have you seen the 10th edition of the Newspeak Dictionary?
No, replied Winston. We're still using the 9th edition in the records department.
There are a few copies of the 10th edition available. In fact, I have one myself, said O'Brien. Perhaps you would like to look at it.
Yes, very much, replied Winston, immediately understanding what O'Brien was going to do.
Good. Perhaps you could collect it from my flat, said O'Brien. Let me give you the address.
O'Brien wrote his address on a small piece of paper with a gold pen. He gave the paper to Winston, saying, I am usually at home in the evenings. Then he was gone. Winston read the address and later dropped the piece of paper into a memory hole. Their meeting had only lasted for about 2 minutes. Winston decided that it could only have one meaning. A conspiracy against the party existed, and O'Brien was inviting him to join it.
My first step towards this day was my first secret thought, Winston said to himself. My second step was when I moved from thoughts to words and started writing my diary. Now I'm going to move from words to actions when I go to visit O'Brien. And the last step will happen in the Ministry of Love. I know it and accept it, but I feel like I'm stepping into my grave.